Good morning, everybody. Thank you for inviting me to this conference. I will present a paper which is not entirely finished yet. Its authors are Jichang Lu, who unfortunately is not here today with us, Philippe Yerosh from Synopsys, and myself from the Oriental Institute of Czech Academy of Sciences. And it's a joint policy brief which looks at how technology is used for exerting the social and political control in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region of China, how this system of control, of technological control and repression, is spreading within China, and how it's being extended beyond the boundaries of People's Republic of China, and what are the implications of this trend for other countries, including the Czech Republic and other European countries. I think we all follow news and we all roughly know what is happening in Xinjiang.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Thanks. No, it's okay. Thank you. Sorry. Yes, all right. Xinjiang in the Xi Jinping era is experiencing a fundamental shift in pretty much all aspects of life, something Martin has been talking about here, which was announced at the 19th Party Congress in 2017, I believe, as under the term New Era, which however was, had been happening from 2011, same trend, we can trace the same trend in Xinjiang. So since the beginning of the Xi Jinping era, there is a new style of governance being introduced in Xinjiang. It's called the new circumstances, of course, as usual with Chinese administration. Parts of it are not that new, but the whole concept and the whole extent and effort with which it's being implemented is unprecedented shortly. So new circumstances have been, this term has been appearing in Xinjiang official discourse since the beginning of the Xi Jinping era. For Xinjiang, it means a consolidation of domestic governance of the Communist Party of China and increasing the prominence of Xinjiang in China's foreign policy. And of course, it coalesces with a number of domestic trends, which I will not get into here. Xinjiang is the core, so-called core region of the Belt and Road Initiative. It is, has been called the both motive and precondition of Belt and Road Initiative. Again, not no need to explain this in greater detail geopolitically. Xinjiang is highly important for China. It also connects the two branches of the Belt and Road Initiative, the maritime and the mainland branch. So it's highly important. At the same time, there was a wave of violent resistance incidents, terrorist incidents, which peaked in May 2014, coincidentally during Xi Jinping's visit to the region. So the reaction was swift. A party called the meeting in May 2014, which for the first time in history of the People's Republic of China defined the problem in ethnic terms. However, the forum did not choose the best way to solve this issue. It chose to crack down on any expressions of Uyghurs and Kazakhs and other ethno-religious communities' identity in expressed in language, religion, culture, and all other aspects of existence. A very vital component of this trend or of this new governance is propaganda and what is called thought work, which means altering people's values, people's worldview, the way they think. That means also what they consider as important, what they think they should do, what they think they are expected to do. So these are some of the new priorities of the leadership compared to the previous administrations. It's a very big difference. Another milestone was appointment of Chen Chuenkuo, who had been a regional party secretary in Tibet. He was appointed to the regional party secretary post in August 2016, and his appointment marks again a different or a new beginning or a new stage in Xinjiang government. He firstly revived a number of Maoist, old school traditional Maoism methods of governance, which is mass incarceration, the infamous concentration camps, which are concentration camps. However, it is more precise to call them as political re-education camps. A number of practices which can be called genocidal practices, as they aim to eliminate not only Uyghur culture but also Uyghur religious practice, language practice, and other expressions of distinct identity, mass propaganda campaigns, cadre deployment to households, restrictions on domestic and international travel, so-called grid-style social management, convenience police stations, state control of the economy, enhancement or increase of use of state violence and state-sponsored terrorist practices. So by all means, it is possible to call Xinjiang a totalitarian regime, as the party really tries to control all aspects of people's lives, including what's in their heads. They try to control also the way people give birth. They control children are being removed from their parents and placed into nursery homes and so-called orphanages, so which is one among other traits of genocide as stipulated by the International Convention of Genocide. So also the term genocide is fully apt here. Secondly, Chen Chuenkuo instituted did a number of measures which can be called neo-totalitarian or cyber dictatorial. So in other words, use of technology to implement this style of government. And this is what the following presentation is mostly about. We don't have, unfortunately, or we don't have time to go into specifics of the party's religious policy and thought work in terms of priorities and ideational conceptual design of these policies, so we will skip this this detailed slide, and we will go to general introduction of how technology is used for implementing totalitarian arrangement in Xinjiang. So technology is being used by Chinese authorities in several ways. A general principle which Philip has touched upon before is the co-optation of technological companies into the political system of the People's Republic of China, which is devised, run, oversought, evaluated, adopted, innovated, etc., by the Communist Party. The business technological companies are being co-opted, so there is a close coalescence or co-optation synergy. There's a number of ways, fusion, there's a number of ways of how we can call this this use of business elites by the party state system, also by military entities, which is a trend, as I mentioned and as Philip has pointed out, is being implemented in the entire People's Republic of China. But Xinjiang is a place where all these trends are very clearly visible. It's also a trial space of many of these technologies. Many things related to technological authoritarianism have been tried out in Xinjiang before. A program or a system or feature, let's say feature, which deserves the most attention, which is the spine of all these technological totalitarian measures, is so-called Integrated Joint Operation Platform. It has been brought up by a Human Rights Watch report in May of this year, when they published a paper which reverse engineered an application which revealed a lot of knowledge about this joint platform. More information is coming from the recent document leaks on Xinjiang, which have been published by International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, and it contains four bulletins which prove the existence and the name and number of other knowledge about this integrated joint operations platform. So we know now that it's a joint environment or system which collects personal information about Uyghurs or other types of population. It reports on their activities, which of course are seen as suspicious by the state, and it prompts investigations of the people which are determined by the system as problematic. The system, the platform, collects information from IDs, from police checkpoints, from registered and chipped cars, from CCTVs, for example, with facial recognition, from mandatorily installed spyware, which Uyghurs and other ethno-religious minorities have to mandatorily install on their iPhones and computers. It monitors, of course, payment transactions, email correspondence. It uses so-called Wi-Fi sniffers, data from so-called Wi-Fi sniffers, which monitors individual Wi-Fi spots, traffic, etc. So it's a very advanced monitoring platform. It gathers and surveils people in bulk. So this fact directly refutes the official Chinese narrative that the policies are pre-crime or that they are targeted. No, they monitor everybody, and it's specifically determined. It's specifically mentioned in the leaked documents that Uyghurs and other suspicious individuals should be investigated one by one. So basically everybody by sweep. This platform was developed by China Electronics Technologies Corporation, which has, by the way, partnerships with universities in Sydney, Manchester, Graz, and it owns Hikvision Company, which is another technological giant, which I will hopefully get to in greater detail. So this is a major elephant in the room, this platform. There are a number other ways which technology is used. So I've mentioned already so-called anti-extremist spying applications which people have to mandatorily install into their phone. Borders with Central Asia, for example, specifically the border with Kazakhstan, which is geographically and also let's say normatively very permeable because it's on a flat land, on a steppe. Also, China previously had an agreement with Kazakhstan, which people, specifically Kazakhs from other Xinjiang, could travel here and there to visit relatives. They could also immigrate to Kazakhstan. So border is patrolled by Koala AI technology system, which again uses several methods for face recognition, etc. Of course, all social media, purchasing applications such as WeChat are monitored and being co-opted into this system of technological governance. Platforms such as TikTok and applications such as TikTok or Zapia, which is developed by Du Mobile company, which has investments both from China and the United States and is based in Beijing, are the data from these platforms are being utilized by Beijing authorities to monitor people and to flag people as suspicious. We would like to. How much time do I have? 10 minutes. Okay. So we are concentrating on two specific cases. One of them, of course, is the Huawei company, which we cannot omit. Philip already mentioned this. The fact that Huawei has an extensive role in China's technological authoritarianism and its expansion abroad, often with collaboration with collaborators from democratic countries, institutions, business entities, academic entities, etc. Lots of the technologies Huawei has been using has been implemented in Xinjiang and tried out in Xinjiang. Huawei has extensive partnerships with the Ministry of Public Security. Public security at the national level, as well as with individual public security bureaus in Xinjiang and Urumqi. Another interesting point is that Huawei set up an intelligent security industry innovation lab in Urumqi, which is working on technological innovations, and it tries to implement so-called social stability and long-term securities, which are key conceptual takeaways from the Xinjiang Work Forum in 2014. Huawei also exports smart city technology abroad, including to Europe, for example, Germany, Duisburg, France, etc. Huawei's vice president for Central and Eastern Europe and the Nordic countries recently, by the way, denied knowing about any concentration camps for Uyghurs in Xinjiang. Similar to expression, by the way, to Volkswagen central CEO, who also does not know anything about any concentration camps in Xinjiang, where Volkswagen has extensive business, as a matter of fact. This is a picture, official picture, which shows the partnership signing the strategic partnership treaty between Huawei and Xinjiang provincial authorities. Another official occasion when Huawei's owner, or Huawei's general secretary, let's say, Ren Zhengfei, is partnering up with Xinjiang provincial authorities at the occasion of establishing the innovation lab in Urumqi, etc. So in short, Huawei is a co-actor and the co-perpetrator of the genocidal practices and systematic human rights abuses in Xinjiang. And we should keep this in mind in dealing with Huawei. Another co-perpetrator and co-actor, co-sponsor of these genocidal practices and systematic human rights abuses in Xinjiang is Hikvision, who has also extensive business worldwide. Sorry. Hikvision, who has also extensive business worldwide, including many European countries, including the Czech Republic, specifically Jablotron company, which I think as a Czech citizen, I think this deserves a meticulous attention. Again, there are number of ways Hikvision cooperates. It authored the master supra or meta platform for data surveillance, which I had been talking about before. It Hikvision wins as a producer of surveillance cameras and face recognition technology. It wins numerous contracts. In Xinjiang, for instance, in southern Xinjiang, Moyi County in Uyghur Karakash County, which is the core of Khotan Prefecture, one of the most sensitive and most hardly struck down upon places in Xinjiang, etc. So Hikvision, another company worth paying attention to. Technological authoritarianism beyond China. It has been already mentioned here, technology, vital part of the Belt and Road Initiative, so-called Digital Silk Road, the concept of something China calls internet sovereignty, which means basically an so-called independent or sovereign internet system, which is not internet at all because it's closely controlled by party. The party closely or very clearly envisions technology as a means to broadcast its voice, to voice its ideas and worldview and ideology in the world. This the first line is a quotation from official party document. Party's ideas always become the strongest voice in cyberspace, means technology should lead to here. China exports surveillance technology and all other means, which I've been talking about here before, to geographically, mostly Central Asia, Latin America, Africa, but also some European countries. Typologically, of course, to non-democratic polities, but also to democratic states. Czech Republic, despite having issued a cybersecurity agency warning against Huawei and ZTE, at the same time, Huawei has managed to sign about 50 deals with state institutions for contracts in supplying technology to state institutions. So it is. There is extensive cooperation, of course, with Central Asian countries, which lasts well before the Xi Jinping era, of course, accelerating in the Xi Jinping era. Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, where, of course, these contracts or this cooperation has been aided by local elites and their significant degree of cooptation into China's foreign policy, including cooperation on Xinjiang. So there are two main implications we would like to stress in our paper. Well expressed by Adrian Zenz in a recent US Congress hearing, by doing business with any type of technology company in China, you are implicated in the Xinjiang genocide and human rights abuses. And secondly, doing business with Chinese technological entities amplifies the security threat the PRC poses, or the Communist Party of China's activities poses, to democratic countries and the democratic world. Therefore, we recommend, specifically in regards to Xinjiang, to create an entity list, similarly to the United States entity list, which lists entities instrumental, involved, implicated in the Xinjiang genocidal and human rights abuses. Secondly, business should be banned with institutions both from among domestic and from among domestic entities. Yeah. Thirdly, exports of technology to China, which can be used in systematic genocidal practices and human rights abuses in Xinjiang, should be banned, and also scrutiny and coverage of the party policies in Xinjiang. With a focus on collaboration of technology with collaboration with technological so-called business or so-called privately owned entities should be highlighted and scrutinized.